141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on Scottish Cup semi-final weekend. Celtic and Aberdeen will meet in the final after seeing off St Johnstone and Hearts respectively. Hearts aren't happy with referee John Beaton though and have issued a statement saying as much. And Hamilton Accies are officially relegated from the Championship after that 15-point deduction. But wait to find out if that deduction will stand in its entirety. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you've got Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah.
And it's Celtic versus Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup final, Gordon. A couple of great semi-finals at the weekend. Eisen Maida up to 33 goals for the season. Odie Daba hasn't got 33, but he got the biggest win of his career to send Aberdeen into the final. Falkirk have had to keep the champagne on ice, and we've had to keep producer John in a darkened room. There could be drama left in the Championship, and maybe Mark Wilson can put another spanner into the works on Friday night. You sent me to Hamilton on Saturday. Not great on the park, even worse off the park. Major confusion at the bottom end of the Championship. And all this before the Championship gets back on Saturday. The Premiership has its post-split fixtures. Celtic can win the league at Tannadice on Saturday. And poor Andy Halliday might just be ready after his concussion to get back onto a game of football.
Hopefully, that's certainly the plan. But as of now, one thing we do know is the Scottish Cup finalists are now in place. It's Aberdeen versus Celtic, a couple of games that I'm sure we'll analyse tonight. And listen, a lot of excitement come for the lower leagues at the weekend. I was in here with you on Saturday, Gordon. Obviously, the major shot being Falkirk. Everybody expecting them to all but wrap up the title on Saturday against Raith Rovers, drop points. They're off to a big game against Partick Thistle on Friday.
Come on then, 01419511025. What are you thinking tonight? If we start yesterday and work our way backwards. What did you make of that performance, Celtic fans? How satisfactory was that for you? Of course, you're expected to win these games. That's just the way it works. But to do it with a bit of gloss, a bit of style, particularly the end of that first half, who stood out for you? Adam Ida has had some off-field stuff to deal with this week. He got backed by his manager, he played the game, he scored the goal. Rio Hatate was heavily involved. Greg Taylor again starting the game, finishing the game, playing a key role amidst calls from his manager to get a new contract sorted. So what did you make of that game yesterday? There were a couple of big refereeing moments, I suppose, with VAR decisions and so on, but not really enough to alter the game either way. So I don't know if that's something you get your teeth into or not. Give us a call then. Everything from Hampden yesterday, 01419511025. What about Saturday's game then? Hearts fans, Aberdeen fans, Aberdeen fans, can you beat Celtic in this final? How do you feel heading into that one? And Hearts fans, talk to us about this statement, because Cammy Devilman sent off, you went down to 9 men, the club have issued a statement not happy about it. Do you agree? Are you giving your club the full backing? Would you rather focus on their shortcomings perhaps? Because lots of you last week called in here and said that Neil Critchley needed to win that semi-final. He didn't. So what does that mean? Is that the end of the road for you, or do you actually realise that the team performed pretty well, we're up against it with 10 men and then 9 men, and you go on and see what happens from here? Again, same number, 01419511025. As for you Rangers fans, obviously it was a quieter weekend than you would have liked, having gone out the cup earlier on, but it just really means attention's going to the future, the takeover, the next manager, all that sort of stuff. Now you know Europe is done, you've really not got much but to look into the semi-distant future and look at what's going to come up after the end of this season. So if you have any thoughts there, get them over to us, 01419511025. And the Championship as well, as the guys have alluded to. Hamilton Accies fans, what's your mindset now? Are you relegated in your mind? I mean, officially that's the way it sort of looks, but there's an appeal going in and you'll hope that that has a successful outcome. John Rankin saying he doesn't see it as being relegated, he sees the team as being in seventh. But how do you feel about it? What's the mindset now after the weekend? And how nervous are you Falkirk fans? I was going to say we'll bring producer John in and he can tell us, but he can barely string a sentence together. He's a nervous, trembling wreck, Roger Hanna, after a busy week in the Championship.
Yeah, and I think Stephen Milne, the Dunfermline fan, has been adding to his nerves, his anxiety, his tension. Surely Falkirk cannot blow it, but they go to Firhill now on Friday night. for a game that you could argue Partick Thistle need the points just as much. It will be a colossal contest in that Firhill pitch on Friday. It's big for Mark Wilson. And how big is it for John McGlynn? Because if this title race goes to the last day, anything could happen, Gordon.
Come on, 01419511025. What did you make of Hampden yesterday or Saturday or the lower league action this weekend or anything else? It's that same number. Give us a call to set the tone for you both then. What was your result of the weekend?
I'm going to edge it for our first finalist that was concluded at the weekend. I'm going to go for Aberdeen. I think everyone felt that Aberdeen were slight favourites going into the game, but not much, certainly between the two teams. And if you're getting to, you know, one win away for your first Scottish Cup win in 35 years, then I think you deserve it. So I'm going to go for Aberdeen.
All the focus was in Falkirk. I'm going to go for Raith Rovers, who have gone to the league leaders. They have been a goal behind with 2 minutes to go and have somehow managed to win the game 3-1. They're now level on points with Partick Thistle. They're 8 or 9, I think, 8 unbeaten in the Championship. And Barry Robson might just be stringing together a set of results that could take Raith Rovers into these promotion playoffs, because I think Thistle have got the top two left, Falkirk and Livy. Raith have got, no disrespect to them, Queen's Park and Morton. Raith might be in pole position now, Gordon.
Okay, goal of the weekend?
I think we had a decent choice, actually, even though there's probably not many games as well used to, but I've went for Adam Ida. You know, I go for the old-fashioned team goal. I thought it was a fantastic move. Loads of controlled possession, stinged passes together, but the first real bit of quality within it was when Liam Scales opened up his left foot, played a lovely reverse pass in behind the back four, and then again that man Rio Hatate gets onto the end. It cuts it back for Adam Ida, who you felt as if needed a goal for previous form and some antics during the week as well, and he's the one that tucks it away. So that's my goal of the weekend.
That is serious commitment to the team goal, because it must have been a half a yard finish. I like it that you've got your one track mind with the team goal. I wouldn't change you for the world. Roger Hanna.
Andy awards extra points for artistic merit, but I'm going to award the extra points for sheer importance. Odie Daba, 119th minute, Aberdeen up against 9 men. If they don't win that, imagine the scrutiny that falls on Jimmy Tilleen and his players. But they did win it because Daba was on his toes when Craig Gordon pushed out the shot from Jack Milne. He knocked it into the roof of the net. Aberdeen are going back to Hampden for a cup final.
My goal's for half a yard and Rodgers' goal's for 3 yards.
I was going to say, the combined distance of the goals of the weekend reaches 3.5 yards. Never have we stooped so low. Your howler of the weekend, Roger?
I'm going to go for Hearts. I'm going to start with Michael Steinwender, who should have been sent off and was. The decision's correct. Last man challenge. Your dog's oath that you like to talk about, Gordon.
Love it.
I'm going to go into Cammy Devlin. He had been booked. He had committed a lot of fouls and he kicked Dante Pulvara in the sole of the foot. John Beaton was perfectly within his rights to send him off. I'm then going to go to Michael Geraghty, the assistant manager, getting a red card after the final whistle, and to Neil Critchley for claiming that John Beaton couldn't send him off quick enough. That's deflection tactics. But Neil Critchley's deflection tactics were superseded by the deflection tactics of the club today with that statement complaining about John Beaton. They lost the game. They lost to the better team. They've missed the top six. They've missed knockout stage football in Europe. They've taken 1 point from 9 in the last 3 derbies, and they've yet to win a big game under Neil Critchley. People can see through that statement today.
Take him to task on that, Hearts fans, if you so wish. 01419511025. Andy, your howler of the weekend?
I'm going for Hamilton Academical. Now, this isn't directed towards Hamilton's players. This is not directed towards Hamilton fans. This is Hamilton Academical, who are now relegated as it stands from the Scottish Championship due to mismanagement from above. So always when it comes to moments like this, you've got to feel sorry for the players within it, and obviously for the majority of the fan base. Now, the crazy thing about me giving Hamilton my howler is I could quite equally give Hamilton my result of the weekend, because as it stands, we don't know if that's a good point for Hamilton or it's a point that sent them bottom of the league. It's certainly, from my point of view, Roger's a lot older than me, sorry Roger, but it's unprecedented what we're seeing.
Slightly.
15 points deducted with only 2 games remaining. We're fully expecting the appeal process to start tomorrow, and who knows how long that could ravage on.
It's actually not unprecedented, because I'm older than you, Andy. I can remember 25 years ago when Hamilton had a 15 point penalty and were relegated at the end of the season, saving Queen of the South, because the players who were in the middle of a pair out with the club refused to play a game against Stenhouse Muir.
Do you know what? I completely forgot about that because someone who's equally as old as you, Hugh Keevans, told me about it on Saturday. I just remembered that.
You just didn't believe it when it came from Hugh, but you believe it when it comes from Roger. Right, your top man then, top performer.
I'm giving it to the best midfielder in the league, Rio Hatate. I think he's so undervalued and so underappreciated from Celtic fans, to be honest with you. And I think he's one of the players that I don't think they'll appreciate until he's gone. And I thought he was outstanding at the weekend. I thought he was so involved in everything good that Celtic done, and he leaves the pitch with three assists. The only thing that his performance was missing and that he would have probably deserved as well was a goal.
I'm going to give it to a 17-year-old by the name of Sam Murdoch, who made his debut in goal for Morton on Saturday because Ryan Mullen and Gary Woods were injured. He kept a clean sheet away from home against in-form Airdrie, and to top it all, he got an assist for the winning goal from Tommy Adeloye. Well done, Sam.
Good choices. Let's get stuck in the phones. Jerry is in shots. He was first through tonight. How are you, Jerry?
Hi.
What are you thinking?
I'm just wanting to say how good Maeda was at the week yesterday, and Jota's goal, I think, was outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you guys say about Dyson Maeda? But you're going to have to keep coming up with something because it's another two yesterday. What did you say the total was now for the season?
33.
Didn't play up front yesterday, of course. Played off the side again.
Listen, Jerry, we could sit here for half an hour talking about this because Andy Halliday, and I agree with him, I thought Rio Hatate was man of the match yesterday. Maeda was terrific, two great finishes. Callum McGregor, the captain, kick-started it all with a goal and an assist then for the second goal. You talk about Jota's goal, it was a decent finish, but what a cross by Alistair Johnson for that goal. So this was a day when all Celtic's big hitters, if you like, turned up. McGregor and Hatate in the middle of the park, Maeda up top, Johnson at the back. They performed very well, they won at a canter, and they will be enormous favourites for a treble now, Jerry.
In some ways, Andy, that one of the goals he scored is very symptomatic of what he does to defences, because he makes you slide last ditch and stretch everything you've got and hope that you can cut it out, and inevitably you might not, and if you don't, then he's going to be there to take advantage.
Yeah, and also what's symptomatic his performance is his second goal and how that starts. It starts with him pressing the St Johnson centre-half, put him under duress, and then him making the mistake that ultimately gives Celtic the possession back where he gets his second goal. And I think sometimes context matters as well. Him starting that press for the fourth goal comes when Celtic are 3-0 up with 30 seconds left to go in the first half. It'd be quite easy for him to conserve his energy, know they're 3-0 up and go into the tunnel at half time. But I take you back to when Celtic lose to St Johnson at McDermott Park, and Brendan Rodgers talks about commitment and people not wanting that enough at all times, and you know, the standards and requirements that it takes to play for Celtic, to be at it every single week. I think that just typifies it. It was another excellent performance for Maeda, and he quite easily could have got Muir Rodgers' performance at the weekend as well.
How impressed were you with the overall performance, Jerry?
Well, I thought they were excellent, actually. I mean, when you heard Brendan Rodgers yesterday talking about even Callum McGregor, great captain, probably one of the best captains we've ever had. And the team, just I don't know what it is, but some obviously we've had blips, but sometimes it's, I don't know, it's just, they're, when they come together, they're brilliant.
Yeah, because like we said before, we know Celtic are massive favourites in pretty much every domestic fixture, certainly one at Hampden against the team that's bottom of the league, so you almost, I'm not saying they need to win by five to get credit, but you know what I mean, to catch the eye for people, it's going to have to be a particularly convincing performance, and it probably was that yesterday.
Well,
wasn't
listen, if you can score four goals in an 11 minute burst in any game, Gordon, you deserve plaudits for it. I thought St Johnson played well for half an hour. They were disciplined, they were organised, they did everything you would want them to do defensively, but as soon as Callum McGregor made that breakthrough from Hatate's pass, Celtic just caught fire. 4-0 up at the break. When Jota get the fifth, you just wonder how they would kick on. I think Jota and Maeda both had really good chances to make it more, but it's noticeable since that defeat at Perth, they've won two games, scoring five goals in both games, and they've got four goals in the first half of both games, Gordon. They just now come out and blow teams away. And I think Jim Goodwin was there watching the game at Hampden yesterday with his young son. He'll be worried about what happens in the first half at Tannadice on Saturday lunchtime.
You've come up against them numerous times this season, Andy, and watched on in other games. See that? How sort of powerful is that ability Celtic have, that even if they can't find that breakthrough after half an hour, the game can then be over by half time? You know, like, that's, I feel like often when we talk about teams trying to cause an upset, if you can get through that first half hour, you're in with a not a bad chance. But it's just not the case, it seems, at times.
No, definitely not. And to be honest, I think both teams played relatively well in the first 30 minutes in terms of what they're trying to achieve for the game. I thought Celtic had loads of control. They always looked as if they were batting the door down, but to be fair to St Johnstone, I thought they held strong. I thought they made a lot of blocks at the edge of the box. I thought they were flinging bodies on the line. But again, I'm going to use a cliche, who won't like it, but goals change games. You can just see for that first goal coming in, I thought it sucked a bit of the belief out of St Johnstone. After that, they know they can't really get up the pitch to relieve pressure for the cell, from themselves, sorry. And then it was a case of blinking, you'll miss it. Before you know it, it's 4-0. You're trudging in at half time and thinking, where's that just came from?
You've not to worry, Andy. Nothing about yesterday's game will upset you, because you predicted at 5-3 it would be St Johnstone 0, Celtic 5.
I heard this. I was off yesterday, but news travelled fast to me that he got one right finally.
He was still running round the streets of Mulgay at midnight with his shirt over his head celebrating.
He done well.
Took him to Scottish Cup semi-final stage right at the end of the season to get a prediction right. Okay,
fair. I've seen him actually fist pumping when Maeda missed that chance to make it 6. He was getting his first ever prediction
and he
right.
was on the phone at Clydesdale House trying to get that James Forrest penalty overturned just to make sure it stayed at 5. Thanks to Jerry. What about Brian? What impressed you, Brian?
I just think it was a really good team performance. Now, echoing what the lad said there, McGregor for me is the best player, the best midfielder in the country by a distance. Now, and the reason why is because it's application. McGregor does it all the time. And see, when Rio Hatate does it, you do notice he's absolutely fantastic. But Rio Hatate doesn't do it all the time. Celtic fans love Rio Hatate, absolutely, because I go to every game, I hear them singing his name and they praise him to the high heavens. But we actually have a wee sort of syndicate where we, you know, man of the match of the day, and all the boys that are watching at the football of the day, we take McGregor out of it because it's unfair to the rest of the players, and that's the truth. McGregor was outstanding on Sunday. The way that he rallied the boys, it was that turgid half hour, the first, and much respect to St Johnstone because they done it to us. I was at that game as well when the Beaters won nothing a few weeks ago, and it looked great keeping, you know, for that half hour, that throwing our bodies on the line. But the key for us was, yes, McGregor and Hatate were involved in the goal, the first goal, but the whole thing was McGregor's drive forward. It was relentless. In that first, that last 15 minutes of the first half, McGregor's orchestrating, and that's what caused the four goal and good finishing and things like that. But the whole thing is, the season has went up and down and up and down, but I always, it's going to be the context of how good were Celtic this season. At the beginning, they were fantastic. Then they held on and kept pushing and being in front and getting that. And I mean, whatever happens to other teams behind us has nothing to do with us. We've just got to deal with what ours is. Then we have a slowdown run about, I mean, I'd say January. For January, we've been sluggish and the football's not been the greatest. But when we are good, everything goes through McGregor. So that tells you that at this point, we must strengthen from this point, even though we're going to have a world record, 9 trebles if we beat Aberdeen. All respect to Aberdeen, we will take care of them in the final when it comes along. But we must strengthen for the position. You know, the money's there. Yeah. There is, the fans are all over, you know, everybody, it seems to be moving in the right direction, regardless of what happens at other clubs. It's nothing to do with us. We must strengthen heavily and give Brendan another chance at this.
Standards must be high if this season for Celtic's been described as up and down. But I know what Brian means.
Listen, Gordon, you and I were at Hampden yesterday and we were in the manager's post-match press conference, and we heard the praise that Brendan Rodgers lavished on Callum McGregor.
Why don't we hear it? Since Brian brought it up, go on then. Let's hear the thoughts of the manager on the Celtic captain.
Yeah, he's just such a special player. I've had him in 2 spells now and managed him for so many games. He's a real tactical decision maker in the game. He sets the tempo for the team. He's a coach on the pitch for me. He knows the patterns that we want, and he identifies the moments when to step in. Because you're playing against man-to-man, there's little patterns that freeze you up to be going forward. And he's done it so many times for me, especially here at Hampden, where he gets such important goals. But first one creates the second one. Just a brilliant captain of this club, and he was so good today.
Brian says Callum McGregor's the best midfielder. You say it's Rio Hatate. You want to argue it out?
Listen, it's a good argument because it's two fantastic players. I think, listen, Callum McGregor's been doing it for so long, so it's very, very hard to argue that due to, you know, the period of time that he's obviously been dominating that midfield area. I just think Rio Hatate for me is, I don't think anybody else in Celtic's team can do what Rio Hatate does, and I don't think there's an attribute he's not got. I think he's so industrious off the ball, and I think on the ball he's so good in tight areas. He'll run in behind, he's unselfish, he can score a goal for outside the box, he makes darts at the back post inside the box. But listen, Callum McGregor has been somebody that's been such a great servant for Celtic, and he does that deep line midfielder role so well, which has not always been his position. But what I think he does very well when he plays that role is he's still so proactive, he's still willing to get forward and join attacks. And Brendan Rodgers just talked about the patterns of play up against man-to-man. I think you see that perfectly in the second goal. You know, Callum McGregor's man marked, as I think it's Cameron Carter-Vickers that's got the ball. Adam Eder drops, and as soon as it leaves Cameron Carter-Vickers' feet to go to Adam Eder, Callum McGregor's already running off the back of the St Johnson midfielder in a split second. As a midfielder, it's so hard to mark. And then from there, he plays the pass in behind, and I think, is it Sam Curtis that nearly gets a toe on it, and Dyson Meda gets his first goal. But listen, I think it's a decent argument between both, but I'm still edging towards Hatate.
You talk about, Brian's talking there about signings. I think Celtic might sign two central midfielders in the summer, because you're not going to see Odin Thiago Holm back, you're not going to see Kwon back. At the minute they're running with five, McGregor, Hatate, Engel start, Bernardo and McCown come on. I think they're one shy. And at 27, it's at the back of my mind that this might be the summer Hatate goes.
0141 951 1025. If you want to pick up on that topic or bring up something new entirely, now's the perfect time to do so, and we'll get you on next.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. It's 0141 951 1025. Let's hear Brendan Rodgers' thoughts on Celtic's performance at Hampden yesterday.
Yeah, such a great performance. Obviously, St Johnson made it really difficult for us in that first period. And it is, when you're playing against that sort of man-to-man, you have to work so hard to rotate and be flexible in your movement to create the space. But once we then did that for the first goal, and we got the runner off the marker, and Callum finishes, then and from that we really set the tempo of the game. And so, It was very impressive, and a big applause to the players, because they were so good in the game. I spoke before to the players about my thoughts going into this game was, this was about having the humility to get the work in. Because once you're a team that's winning, then it becomes even harder, because you have to work even harder, because teams are trying to stop you, and they have that fight and they put that extra percent in to stop you. So it's having that humility to run, to work, and then after you do that, it's then about the ambition in the game, and that's what we showed today. Even in the first half, the second half we come out, and our messaging was to make sure we retain the tempo, keep the speed in the game, keep the pace in the game, attack the game, press the game, and hopefully more chances will come, and they did come, but we didn't quite finish them. But that's a huge testament to the players.
See, that on that point, Roger, about, you know, once you start winning, it's actually hard to keep on doing it. I suppose, is that backed up by his own record at Hampden? Is that where his own record at Hampden deserves a bit of praise? Because again, if you isolate that game, Celtic are expected to beat St Johnstone at Hampden. And see, every time somebody else rocks up, they're expected to win it. So on one-off games, clearly that's what's required or what expected. But is that 14 games at Hampden, and Brendan Rodgers has lost none of them. I mean, even the sort of law of averages that you just come unstuck one day and it hasn't happened to him yet.
Yeah, I was speaking to the show yesterday before kickoff, you know, between 2 and 3 with Andrew and the guys, and it was just saying, you know, Celtic have slipped up in these occasions before. I was thinking back to 2010, the Ross County semi-final, 2015, the Cali Thistle semi-final. So it's not unknown for Celtic to slip up unexpectedly at a semi-final. But it is unknown for it to happen under Brendan Rodgers, and that says a lot, I think, about the way he sets those teams out, as you say, in those one-off games. They can lose games of football. They lost one at Perth to St Johnstone a couple of weeks ago. It won't be damaging in the long run, but I think it was damaging to, you know, the reputation of the Celtic team temporarily. You know, they were unhappy with it. Brendan accused them of coasting. He accused them of being in the comfort zone, some of them. They've certainly not been in the comfort zone the last couple of weeks. They've responded really well. 5 against Killie, 5 against St Johnstone. He's still unbeaten at Hampden, and he can test that record now in the 24th of May against Aberdeen.
I don't envisage his record changing that day either, do you?
No.
Any Aberdeen fans want to disagree with that? You're more than welcome. James is in Port Glasgow. How's it going, James?
I'm fine, Gordon.
Good
evening, Andy and Roger.
Hi, James.
I'd like to make a wee point about signings.
Mm-hmm.
There was a caller on, it's going to steal a bit of my thunder. We've got 6 games to go and they need to strengthen for the Champions League. We don't have the luxury of going through. When we win the Championship, we've got to play a qualifier. It's going to cost us £30 million. That's the prize. I would hope that Brendan's got players in mind. Could it be 1, 2, 3 or 4? But let's get them signed long before the transfer window opens, so that when the boys come back to start pre-season, we've got a full team. We don't wait to the transfer window to 2 days to go before we buy players. Surely this time we can get the players in. We've got the money. I'd like to know what you think of that.
Yeah, well, I think that's been a frustration for Celtic fans for a period of time. We had loads of callers in January during the January transfer window. You know, Celtic felt as if they needed a striker once Kyogo left. Felt as if they needed a left back, and you know the likes of Schlupp and these signings that they made, it never really came towards the latter stages of the window. So I always feel like as soon as the January transfer window's closed, that the people behind the scenes in the boardroom, the head of recruitment, 9 times out of 10 that I've heard, they always get together and start planning ahead for the summer. Now, the difficulty is sometimes is, you know, other clubs don't know their budgets, they don't know what they want to bring in, they don't know who they want to sell. Sometimes it's just about clubs making an offer that they can't refuse. Now, also what is going to play a part in this is Celtic current players are who's going to leave and who's going to stay, and a big one of them being Greg Taylor. Because as it stands right now, I think everyone feels that if Greg Taylor leaves, that Celtic are going to have to strengthen that left-back position. Brendan Rodgers has certainly been pretty vocal about the fact that he wants the left-back to stay. And from what we're hearing, the rumours are starting to swirl a wee bit that it could be staying.
Andy must know something we don't. So if you want to tap into his insight, you can give him a call. Roger, the thing about this is, James is not wrong in his desire, but there is not a team, manager or fan, any club, any league, any part of this planet, who would not prefer to do their transfer business early. Everybody does. So it's all right saying that you want to, as Andy's alluded to. There are just so many moving parts. You might be dipping into a market where X player needs to leave and that guy needs to be replaced, and then that frees up this player to go to Celtic. Similarly, Celtic might wait. What if Rio Hatate leaves with 3 days to go over the window?
I've suspected for a while, Gordon, that because Celtic did a lot of their business so late in the window last year, that they maybe paid a little bit more for some players than they would ideally have done. You know, 11 for Engels, 9 and a bit for Ida, 6 for Trusty. I think they would have preferred to have done the business earlier and at a lower cost. And because of that, I think Celtic will work doubly hard this year to get the business done early. There'll be a lot of business needing done. Kieran Tierney's coming in. There'll be another left back.
I suppose that's true. That's already done. Yeah, so that's very early business.
Yeah, so whether that means, you know, Greg Taylor re-signs, Jeffrey Sloop re-signs perhaps, I think there'll be another centre back coming in, because I think Navrodsky will go, I think Lagerbielko will go, I think Stephen Welsh will go. As we discussed earlier, I think there'll be 2 central midfielders coming in, because I think they're 1 down from what they should be, and there's always a threat of it, likes of a Hatate going. Celtic will sign a winger, because Celtic always sign a winger. I think, you know, the likes of Lewis Palmer will go. I'm still not 100% sure on Hugh Keevan's friend Yang.
I thought you were going to say just generally not 100% sure on Hugh Keevan's.
James Forrest is another year older, so I think there'll be a winger coming in. And then there's the conundrum about a striker. If Celtic consider Dyson Maida to be the number one striker and Adam Ida to be the number two striker, then they might not sign a striker.
Are you confident, James, that things will be going on in the background now, and because Celtic pretty much have got the title over the line and are into a cup final, that it could happen early, get things, well, get the ball rolling?
So. I would hope so, because in the past we've always struggled. And the most important thing about a transfer is cash. Can you afford to buy that player? Well, we can. We've got the money now, but I don't think we'll be held to a ransom. But as I say, the most important thing is the Champions League qualifier. We don't have the luxury, as I say, as soon as the league's won, that's us in the Champions League, we can sit back and take it easy. Well, we can't. Because I'd like to know, Blackie Boys, who's the possible opponent that we could get in that Champions League qualifier? Does anybody know?
I tell you what, I certainly don't. You'll be doing well to know that at this stage just now. But
I could try and bluff my way through that. It's a flat no from me, Roger Hannah.
No, we haven't seen any UEFA coefficients so far, who it might be. You know, Celtic go in quite late, as you know, James, into that playoff round. There's about three rounds before that. A lot can happen between the first round and the playoff round when Celtic enter. So it's just, you know, we'd just be guessing at this stage.
And thank you, James, for putting everyone on the spot and exposing us for not knowing all of them. Said that, I think that's a tough ask, because various leagues haven't been won yet,
yeah,
and runners up places haven't been confirmed, and so on. Thomas is in East Kilbride. How are you, Thomas?
Not bad, Parham. Can I ask you a wee favour, please?
Go for it.
Well, my fiance's here, and she thinks I'm a dafty phoning you, but can you say hello to her, please?
What's her name?
Connie.
Hi, Connie.
Thomas is of sound taste, spending his bank holiday Monday phoning us. He's a wise man who makes good decisions. I won't hear a bad word against him. But hope you're enjoying your day anyway, Connie. Go on, Thomas.
Right, my point is, I think Brendan, I'll start thinking out further fields, because he's going to win the treble here.
Say that again, sorry. Do we think he'll what?
Think the further fields, because it's going to go on for a treble. I think somebody else will come in for Brendan.
Alright, be tempted
like
away.
Like a Tottenham, Thomas?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He did a swap deal, get Ange back.
These phone lines would blow up, wouldn't they?
Oh jeez, I would need to extend the show for goodness knows how many hours. I don't know, what do you think?
He seems pretty happy where he is, I must say. The interesting thing is that, you know, a lot of people might say that he's not going to do that again. I think he's learnt his lesson for the last time with the backlash he got. But there's nothing to say that a top club wouldn't come in for a Brendan Rodgers, seeing the success he's had domestically up in Scotland. That being said, again, I think it was James, the previous caller, was asking us to tell the future by who Celtic's potential Champions League qualifiers could be up against. I think Thomas is maybe doing the same just now, because you just never know, Thomas. But one thing I will say, he certainly seems happy where he is.
I always thought, Roger, if Brendan Rodgers came back up here and won a couple of domestic trophies, I'm not sure how much that would have moved the dial, really, down south, because he's been there before. He's also won things here before. But what he probably needed for his own sort of reputation, if you like, was to do something in the Champions League, and they did a relatively good job, didn't they?
I've always thought, at some stage in his career, Brendan Rodgers would manage overseas. He speaks fluent Spanish. I've always thought he might end up at some stage later on, you know, in La Liga. Now, I'm not talking Barcelona and Real Madrid, but, you know, a reasonably high-profile team over there. When he came back to Celtic, he pledged to the Celtic supporters that he'd signed a three-year deal and he would do the 3 years. I am pretty sure he will be good to his word and will do the 3 years. What I'm not so sure about is whether he will do beyond the 3 years. And I think next season, Gordon, this is going to, it's going to become a thing for Celtic fans, for the media, for everyone, trying to find out what Brendan Rodgers' long-term plans are.
So you don't think he'll sign another contract?
I'm not sure.
He still could, you know, anyway.
Listen, it wouldn't at all surprise me if we get to a stage at the start of next season where Celtic are in the Champions League group stages and what have you, and he does commit for an extra year. But he said himself, you know, when he does, the end of this contract will be 6 years as Celtic manager. That's a long time to be Celtic manager. he may commit for another season. I don't know. I think after he leaves Celtic, though, I have a feeling his next job might be continental.
By the way, in 40 minutes, Rodgers had Brendan leaving, mm-hmm. Rio Hatate leaving.
That's right, so he has, yep.
Who's next?
No, I'm not having either of them. Brendan said he'll stay until next season. He's not committed beyond the end of next. I've said Brendan will see his contract out. Mm-hmm. It's a certainty Brendan will see his contract out.
Did you see him signing a new deal, Thomas?
Brendan to sign another. I mean, because he's going to say, like, taking, like, but Celtic want, I mean, because the way Celtic's been playing now, unbelievable. Like, we're just blowing everybody away.
Well, remind me to phone in sick if he does decide to up sticks like last time. That was lively, to
say
the least.
Call me in 5 days a week.
Thank you very much to Thomas. On the line, 01419511025 is the number that you need. It's a good time to call, whether you are on the same theme or want to mix it up with something totally different. Please do, whilst I run this past you. Clyde One. Make Me a Winner is here. £530,000 could be in your bank account by the end of the week. So for your chance to win, text YES to 61025. Texts are £250 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at makemeawinner.co.uk for £250, or you can call 03434 269340, and those calls are charged at a standard rate. It is over 18s only. All the rules for this Rail Network competition are on our website, and the lines close at 5 p.m. on Friday. £530,000. Text YES to 61025.
Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. 01419511025 on the phones or Twitter at Clyde SSB. Let's bring in Martin, who's on the line. How are you, Martin?
I'm okay, Gordon. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Now, you're an Aberdeen fan, Martin, so you now know what lies in wait come the end of May. Can you do it?
I've been on all season talking to Andy. I won that bet with the Hearts and the Aberdeen top half. I knew they would do it, but look, under no illusions, Celtic are miles clear in every domestic competition. But you live in hope, Gordon. If Jimmy Tilleen and the Aberdeen players and the support didn't have dreams of winning against the best in Scotland, we wouldn't turn up. Look what we've done in the last cup final. We took them to extra time. Cup finals are all 1-1. It's a one-off. But we've got bigger fish to fry at the moment. We try to get into third place, and our big game is on Sunday against Hibs, which I think will beat Hibs. Because Jimmy's goal, as much as we had a dip, he's starting to get progression in the team, and we're starting to win. And Saturday was just glorious. It was just the perfect result.
Were you fearing the worst at any point, Martin? Because
Not really. Hearts are rubbish, and I'm not trying to be derogative or nothing. But Hearts are not. They had a bit of good possession of the ball, but did they make Mitov make any outstanding saves? I don't really think so.
Yeah, I think it's a poor phrasing from me in terms of fearing the worst, because I don't think Hearts ever looked like they were on top, Roger, but Aberdeen made heavy weather of having the man advantage, it felt like.
Yeah, listen, they did. They made very heavy weather the week before of a man advantage against Rangers at Pittodrie. What has sort of almost gone under the radar this weekend is Celtic and Aberdeen reaching a cup final. Fifth place, yes, will be enough to get you into Europe. And Aberdeen now have two bites at the cherry for guaranteed group stage football next season. They can beat Celtic in the cup final to grab it, or if Celtic win the cup final and Aberdeen finish third in the league, they can grab it. So there is so much for Jimmy Tilleen's team to play for in the coming weeks. I think Aberdeen Hibs, and I know inevitably, Gordon, all of the focus on Saturday will fall on Tannadice when Celtic can clinch four in a row. The game of the weekend might be further up the road at Pittodrie, Aberdeen against Hibs. That promises to be a really, really important game of football.
What did you make of Saturday?
I thought Hearts started the better of the two sides in the opening 20 minutes without creating a host of chances. I thought they just settled better into the game. I thought Aberdeen made a few unforced errors, especially when they were on the ball. But I thought the complexion of the game completely changes when Steinwinder gets sent off. I think Keskinen's been, for me, one of Aberdeen's best players this year, and I think that's everything that Keskinen's very, very good at. He's very, very direct, very quick, and I think Steinwinder just misjudges the speed of him, thinks he's going to get there first. You know, Keskinen gets a toe onto the ball, and for me, in the end, it was ultimately a deserved red card. And then, I must say, to be honest with you, I thought Hearts were still fairly comfortable with 10 men. I felt Aberdeen were always in control of the game, but you know, they never had their second shot on target till extra time, so it's not as if they were battering the door down, making Craig Gordon make save after save. It wasn't really till extra time where I thought Aberdeen started to go into the game a wee bit more. Craig Gordon then makes a fantastic save down low to his left, but then ultimately when Cammy Devon gets his second booking, it makes it a lot more difficult for Hearts, and Omar Dabba grabs a goal, it sends him to the final.
Martin, you'll have seen a few cup semi-finals and finals against Celtic in recent times, and obviously not managed to get any of them to go your way. What gives you that glimmer that this one could be different?
It's a one-off game. And I was listening to the John Hewitt documentary where he was talking about when we were the dominant force in Scottish football, when Aberdeen under Willie Miller, McLeish, Rugby, Leighton, all these guys, John Hewitt and all these, Jim Bett. And that gives you as soon as you walk in, if you've never been to Pittodrie, as soon as you walk in the front doors, the history shouts at you, Gordon. And that's what we need to take. We need to take that glory for past and bring it here. We're not going to be as glorious as that, because it'll never be done again. That was a one-off. It's a one-off. But you can't just... If I really thought that I had no chance and the Aberdeen support never had a chance, and Jimmy Tilleen, what's the use of turning up? What is the use of turning up?
That's exactly the mindset, Roger. If I was an optimistic Aberdeen fan like Martin, you might say, well, we took them to penalties in last season's cup semi at Hampden, so that shows that you can get
Park
there.
Earlier in the season. One thing I will say is...
To balance it, if you're a pessimist, you might say we played them at Hampden this season and lost 6-0. So, but what clearly remains, because it's just a fact, it is a one-off. Shocks happen in football. And by the way, we're not talking a shock of different divisions or multiple places between teams in the pyramid.
The bad news for Martin is I was at Dens Barnfield Super Scoreboard 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was sat next to Willie Miller. I'm not sure he'll keep pace with Eisen Maida in a cup final this season. The good news is that they've got a puncher's chance. It is a one-off game. You see surprises. You look down south, you know, when Wigan beat Man City, when Wimbledon beat Liverpool, these things can happen. So Jimmy Tilleen will tell the players that. He will have them fired up. He'll be reminding them of the 2-2 draw at Celtic Park early in the season. He'll be reminding them of the 3-3 draw at Hampden in the semi-final last season, and the chance to write their names back in the history books, because as we were saying at the weekend, 35 years without a Scottish Cup is too long for Aberdeen.
And that's the thing, Andy, because those two can be like true at once. That is too long, and a club of Aberdeen size should aim to do better than that. Mm-hmm. But once you get there, if you're up against a good version of a Celtic team, then it's, you know, it's not a huge surprise if you go and lose it. So we'll wait and see. A few weeks to go.
Yeah, and they've had many trips to Hampden within that sort of 35 year period since the last time they won the Scottish Cup. Derek McInnes, you know, got Aberdeen to semi-finals and finals over his stint at the club. But listen, I agree with Martin. I think it's going to be a big ask on the day, but of course they have a chance. What I will say is they have to bring that performance that they brought to Celtic Park and more, I think, to go and win the game at the end of May. But there's nothing to say they can't.
Thank you very much to Martin. I'm enjoying the very early build-up to the Scottish Cup final now that we've completed the lineup after the semis at the weekend. Any more thoughts on those? Keep them coming. Let's play this in the meantime.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
The thing I admire about you is that it is a tough school on a Monday night, and yet you still always phone in and give it a go, because why not? Like Martin says, it's a one-off game. Anything can happen. If you want to try and topple Andy Halliday or Roger Hanna. It is 0141 951 1025. Listen, the pressure might be starting to mount on Andy Halliday. He's got that invincible record, and you know what it's like, closer you get to the end of the season, you might start to feel the weight of expectation. So tonight could be your night. Give us a call before 7 and your chance to beat the pundit is next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna's here alongside Andy Halliday, going over the weekend's big talking points. Lots coming out from Hampden yesterday, where Celtic swept aside St Johnstone. If you want to keep going on the analysis of that one, you can do. What about Saturday then? We had an Aberdeen fan on there saying he does believe the Dons can cause a shock in the cup final. What about you Hearts fans? Your club have issued a statement today, unhappy with the refereeing performance on Saturday. Is that something you can get on board with? Or where does the bigger picture leave Neil Critchley after a bit of criticism about big games? Do you let him off with this one because you were down to 9 men in the end? Or is it yet another big disappointment for you? Give us a call, please, and we'll do this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Ryan is on for Beat the Pundit. How are you, Ryan?
Yes, all good, mate. How you doing?
What a way to round off your holiday Monday than to topple one of the big dogs on Beat the Pundit.
I know, but I'm looking forward to it. I've played twice, won twice. So,
Is
what?
That's a development.
What?
Played twice, won twice.
Oh. I like that.
When was the last time you played?
Oh, a couple of weeks ago. I know. Cammy played last Wednesday night when I was on. Yeah.
You've no played.
Only a couple of weeks.
Feels like longer ago than that. But anyway, heads, it will be Andy Halliday. Still trying to protect his 100% record.
Minus one.
Would you up for minus one next season? Gonna have to talk about it.
If I go unbeaten,
Minus two for you, Roger Hanna.
Disgraceful.
On tails. It's heads. It's Andy up against Ryan from Falkirk. So what we do, I mean, you should know, Ryan, you've played a million times. We give Andy some greatest hits radio to listen to so he doesn't hear your attempts. The rules have stayed the same for a long time. Answer as many as you can and pass if you don't know the answer, okay?
Yeah, all good, mate. Good.
Right, 30 seconds then on the clock and your time starts now. Who do Celtic face in their first game after the split?
Dundee United.
How many points are between Falkirk and Livingston in the championship title race now?
5.
What American side are said to be closing in on St Mirren's Toyosi Olusanya?
Dallas.
Where did Rangers sign Clinton and Siala from?
AC Milan.
Who is the top scorer in the championship this season?
Callum Miller.
Who were relegated from the championship at the weekend?
Hamilton.
What club did Cammy Devlin play at before arriving at Hearts?
Millwall.
Okay, let's bring back Andy Halliday. Can you hear us?
Yep.
Good, same set
just
of questions.
Just your daughter's favourite there, Queen.
Oh, you're pushing a Queen fan. No idea why, you're right. She will not let it go. Are you ready?
Yep.
30 seconds, time starts now. Who do Celtic face in their first game after the split?
Dundee United.
How many points separate Falkirk and Livy in the championship
3.
Title race? What American side are said to be closing in on St Mirren's Toyosi Olusanya?
Houston Dynamo.
Where did Rangers sign Clinton and Siala from?
AC Milan.
Who's the top scorer in the Scottish Championship this season?
Brian Graham.
Who were relegated from the Scottish Championship at the weekend? What club did Cammy Devlin play at before arriving at Hearts?
Perth Glory.
Which goalkeeper was in the PFA Premiership Team of the Year?
Kasper Schmeichel.
Ryan.
Yeah, well done, Andy.
Got to build a bit of suspense, Ryan.
Oh. Let's go through them. Cammy Devlin one.
Let's go through them and find out. Celtic faced Dundee United after the split. You both got it. There are now 3 points between Falkirk and Livy in the title race. Speaking of which, Falkirk fans, how are you feeling? This was supposed to be a procession, and it's 3 points with 2 games to play. Are you nervous, or
behind the wall? They're behind the couch at the minute, Gordon.
Is it all very much under control? Give us a call. 2-1 Andy Halliday. It is Houston Dynamo who are said to be closing in on Toyosi Olusanya, which will be my favourite transfer maybe ever.
Yep.
He's out of contract in 5 games time.
Yep.
Essentially. And St Mirren could be getting some money for him.
Yep.
Unbelievable. 3-1 is it, Andy Halliday? Clinton and Siala signed from AC Milan. You got it, Ryan. but so did Andy. He stays two in front. He then stretched his lead because Brian Graham, you're right, Calvin Miller's had a very good season, but Brian Graham is the top scorer. Andy goes three in front. You both knew that Hamilton Accies were technically sort of relegated. Just don't ask John Rankin. Not in his mind, they weren't. But it's still three up to Andy. Cammy Devlin, your old teammate, Newcastle Jets.
Really?
Apparently, according to the sheet. I would be none the wiser. Ryan was out of time. Casper Schmeichel is the PFA Premiership Team of the Year goalkeeper. So you're right, Ryan. It was not enough. Andy Halliday with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What were we saying? A 7, 4, 7, 3, I think. It was a convincing one for Andy Halliday.
He was panicking when he had a 1-2, but
he's got to go minus one next season.
Who did you beat previously, Ryan?
Oh, it was Gondiel, who's not even worth playing, is he? He's murdered.
Agreed.
And then Simon Donnelly, I think.
Oh, see, you never said that with the two people you beat. They don't count.
A win's a win. Wonder if Gondiel, because he changes his bath night to a Monday, doesn't he? In the summer months.
Bath night's a Monday.
So he could be. He could well be listening. He'll not be happy.
I spoke to him this morning. He had a very, very busy weekend. He was in the studio both days.
Is it true that you did that thing to him last night that he really hates? Well, I'm going to have to elaborate quickly on this sentence, where someone told you where he was and what he was out and where he was and what he was doing and who he was with, and then you contacted him to let him know that he had eyes on him.
Possibly.
How unhappy was he on a scale of 1 to furious?
A red hot furious.
Good. I really look forward to discussing it with him.
I would share the text messages with our good listeners, but it's not yet the watershed.
That's what happens when he thinks he can go off to a quiet part of the country and you've got eyes and ears everywhere, don't you?
As he said,
it was only Wonder Bar.
No, it wasn't.
I might have a big head, but there's a lot of knowledge in it.
Not this time.
Oh, we know that.
Ryan, as a Rangers fan, then what's on your mind at the moment? Because obviously it was Cup weekend. You're out of Europe now. Is it? You just thinking about the long term future? What's going on as a Rangers fan?
I just try to forget the season now, to be honest with you. Obviously, it's a decent spell in Europe. It's getting knocked out with Bilbao, who deserved to go through, in my opinion. We weren't good enough over the two legs. League's obviously been very poor since start to finish. But I just need to get a new gaffer in, just plan for the next season. Hopefully, the gaffer's in sooner rather than later, in my opinion. But you never know. Both Rangers, anyway. You never know.
Do you think that does bring it all into sort of sharp focus now? Because, you know, ultimately, like, no one had really debated the manager or thought too far ahead, because no one knew what was happening with the takeover, and I suppose we still don't. But also, Barry Ferguson was in charge, is in charge, and was still in Europe. Do you now feel like all the Rangers fans are just wanting the season done and just look ahead to what comes next?
Yeah, no, definitely all just waiting now. Like, still go support our team home and away the last five games, but we're just all wishing the season to finish now. Obviously, we all love Barry, but well, no, it's not going to be his job at the end of the season, or next season, sorry. So yeah, just hopefully some fresh new ideas with obviously the takeover happening. I'm guessing it will be happening now. Hopefully we've got something already planned, but again, we'll never know until it's actually happened.
It's a very small update to Roger Hanna, but it is an update nevertheless. Burnley 2, Sheffield United 1. And I know what you might be thinking, what on earth has that got to do with anything? Well, that result would mean that Leeds are promoted to the English Premier League, which in turn means that it's a bit easier for the dual ownership, dual interest bit of this takeover to be negotiated. Now, it was potentially not an obstacle or a huge stumbling block, because the EFL might change this rule in the summer anyway. You often take a look around world football, you tend to find where there's a will, there's a way with these things anyway. But nevertheless, the English Premier League rules are a bit more relaxed than the EFL rules, so it was always going to be just a bit easier, a bit more straightforward in terms of this red tape if Leeds went up. And tonight they will, if this game stays the way it is.
And listen, the 49ers Enterprises and Andrew Kavanagh are coming. The last elements of due diligence are just being done. I think it'll be announced at some stage in May, and there'll be a new ownership at Rangers. And then, you know, Ryan and the rest of the Rangers fans can wait and see what happens in terms of the management structure, in terms of the support structure around the manager, a director of football or a sporting director, whatever you want to call him, Gordon. and then the changes on the pitch, because I think there will be changes in the pitch. There have to be changes in the pitch because the current squad have let down too many managers and let down the supporters too often. There needs to be big alterations in the football department if they are to mount any kind of challenge domestically next season.
Yep, can't disagree with it. But I think also, I think it's an exciting change. It's one that the Rangers fans have been waiting on for a long period of time. They've known to try and get closer to Celtic. They need significant investment. And obviously, from a Rangers point of view, you're just hoping that's what the San Francisco 49ers are going to bring.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan, are you managing to just maintain a level of optimism? Does it still feel exciting and, you know, just kind of take anything that comes after the recent disappointments?
I know, of course, always been optimistic. Every new season's a fresh start, so you always want to be optimistic for the next season. Obviously, Celtic are strong, but I'm going to say something silly here. I don't think we're that far away, but we probably are. It's just that we need a whole new squad, to be honest with you, but that's what I've just contradicted myself there a bit, actually. But Celtic are going to be strong. Rangers need to get stronger. It's going to be a lot of money being spent, but we'll see. But I'm still optimistic, obviously.
Ryan, in a sense, you're right. Nobody's ever that far away. I'll take you back to the year Rangers won the league in 2021. Celtic were in disarray. Celtic brought in a manager called Ange Postecoglou. They had very few players. They had to turn the whole football department round. They looked miles behind Rangers. And within 12 months, they were miles ahead of Rangers because Celtic got the right manager and they signed the right players. Kyogo, Hitati, Maeda, O'Reilly, the list goes on. So you're never that far ahead or that far behind. But if Rangers are to turn it around, they need to do what Celtic did and get the right manager and get the right signings.
You can almost see both sides of that, Andy, can't you? Because I think Roger's right. When Rangers came and won the title, no one saw that coming. Celtic then got it back and then some, you know, but by an absolute mile. But at the same time, I can understand if you're a Rangers fan getting to this state. It's the 21st of April, the season's over, you've watched the Scottish Cup semis at the weekend, the league's been gone for ages, and you just think, you know what, it is going to take something drastic to turn that around. I can see why you might feel that way as well.
Yeah, and that's where the hope's coming from. I'm sick of phoning my dad after every Rangers game and trying to get his tactical analysis on the game, and his answer is, I just can't wait for this takeover. So once that announcement is potentially going to come in May, obviously Rangers fans are just going to look forward at what's going to be drastic changes. And like Roger says, there has to be drastic changes as well. And I'm seeing again strong rumours this week, Steven Gerrard heavily favoured to be the next Rangers manager again. I look back at when he came back into the door for the first time, and I think the gap between Rangers and Celtic then is bigger than the gap between Rangers and Celtic now, believe it or not. That being said, Celtic are clearly strong and they're going to try and improve again and recruit again strong in the summer. So Rangers need to try and do it the same, but do it well.
I work in the media, Gordon. My priority is the media. My priorities are the Scottish Sun newspaper and this programme. The next Rangers manager must be Jose Mourinho.
I agree. Anything that's blockbuster. Ryan, would you take Steven Gerrard back?
No, for me. Not personally not. Been there, done that. I don't like going back the way. I always want to go fresh new ideas, fresh faces in. Obviously, I love Gerrard when he's here, won as a league, but the trophies, one trophy in nine when he was here. Is that good enough to be Rangers manager? I'm not sure. For me, I personally, a different idea. New faces, definitely.
So it's interesting because I think especially at a time when the hope is that everything's going to be new and fresh and shiny, you then you get whoever it would be, you know, a former manager back.
Yeah, that's but a new fresh and shiny either. Could be a Philippe Clement. Do you know what I mean? So it's a new face. It's never been at the club before, and you're looking forward to the appointment, but it turns out to be the wrong appointment. So the fact of the matter is, regardless, it's new and shiny and it's old and old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. You need to get the right man for the job. And you know, everyone says, I hear this a lot, 1-9. You know, Rangers were miles behind Celtic. So the fact that he closed the gap over a period of time to get that one, that ultimately was his remit for the start to stop 10 in a row.
Because you're never winning any of the first few.
Never.
So yeah, I see what you mean.
You need to get the right man, but you need to back the right man as well. And that was one of the things that, you know, worked for Ange Postecoglou. He had so many players went out the door. Celtic needed to back his judgment. They needed to bring in almost a new team, and that new team just blew everyone away.
I think Barry Ferguson's mindset will be heading into this, these post-split fixtures that they begin at the end of this week.
Yeah, it's the next five games for Rangers, with the exception possibly the Old Firm game at Ibrox, are going to be torturous. There is nothing to be gained from these games. And listen, I do exclude the Old Firm game from that, but if they win at St Mirren, doesn't matter.
But you still get stick if you lose. It's like the no-win situation.
100%. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how Barry takes it. Does Barry still believe he's got a chance of getting this job? Does he feel the strongest possible team? Or does he try and, you know, give more time to the Bailey Rices, the Finlay Curtises, people like that, and just, you know, show whoever's in charge next season, and it may be him, show what these guys can do?
Would you be as well doing that, Andy? Do you end up getting a bit more, I don't know if leeway is the right word, but, you know, it then becomes, it's very obvious what you're doing, and it's you know, it's well intentioned, and it's not held against you the same if things aren't going to plan, and ultimately it might benefit these players in the future anyway.
I think especially in a couple, yeah, so the names that Roger mentioned, I think Finlay Curtis, Bailey Rice, I think these are two prospects that have been highly thought of for a long period of time, two boys that have done really well in the youth setup. They've had little glimmers in the first team, so I think there's, for me, I think it would go a long way for the fans to see them get a run in the team and see what they can do. I see a lot of people saying, you know, that the guys that aren't going to be here, you may as well not play them now. I don't really think you can pinpoint that towards anyone, because like we says, there's going to be new investment, new takeover, mm-hmm. new manager with all sorts of different ideas. So I don't think anyone at this present moment in time doesn't have a future at Rangers, and I don't think anyone has a really long term future at Rangers either.
It's good. Listen, the summer's going to be fascinating. Again, I take you back to when it was the huge turnover at Celtic. No one thought, you know, if we go, I'd love to play the tapes back of this show, Gordon, at this stage of when Rangers won the title in 2021 and Celtic were in turmoil. If someone had said to Celtic supporters, I'll tell you what we're going to do, we're going to bring this Australian manager who's never managed in the UK, and he's going to sign three or four Japanese players and a Korean, and Celtic are going to win the league, people would have laughed at you. So anything is possible for Rangers in the summer. They could go and get a manager from anywhere in the world, and he could fill next season's team with players that he knows that we've possibly never even heard of yet. It's going to be a really exciting summer. And, you know, we had callers on earlier on asking what Celtic will do in the summer. Celtic will always tell you that they just, you know, walk to their own beat and do their own things. They will be looking over their shoulder and watching what Rangers are doing, and they will respond in kind with signings.
Thank you very much to Ryan in Falkirk. It's 0141 951 1025. If any of that has enticed you, or if you want to talk about something different, you are more than welcome. It would be a good time to do so, because we will take a breather and get you on when we return.
Taking your calls on Scottish football, 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
It's time for the full-time teaser, which is when you send a question to us and we try and test the pundit's football knowledge between now and the end of the show. Keep those questions coming in. It's fulltime at Clyde1.com on the email. Fulltime at Clyde1.com. On Saturday, the PFA Scotland Team of the Season was revealed, as voted for by the players. And so the question tonight is this: can you name the last 11 players who've made the team of the year without playing for Celtic or Rangers? Who are the last 11 players to make the PFA Scotland Premiership team of the year without playing for Celtic or Rangers? Give me a guess each to kick us off.
Kevin Van Veen.
Yes, 22-23 when he scored all those goals at Motherwell.
Hey, Sam Dalby.
Yes, 2 days ago when he was named in the team.
Lauren Shanklin.
Yep, last season. He won the Player of the Year as well.
And James Penrose.
From the weekend. Okay, we'll leave it there. Just quickly, if anyone didn't see it, actually, I suppose we could. We could recap it quickly. Kasper Schmeichel in goal for the team of the season. Alistair Johnson, Cameron Carter-Vickers, John Souter and James Penrose. A midfield three of Callum McGregor, Rio Hatate and Nico Raskin. And a front three of Nicholas Kuhn, Daizen Maeda and Sam Dalby. I know you were here on Saturday, Andy, but remind us, what did your team look like?
I had Rocky Bashiri in centre half
instead
over
of
John Souter.
Right.
And I had Triantis in midfield, and I can't remember if that was over Cal McGregor or Nico Raskin, but it was one of them.
Would you argue with it, Roger? It's funny, I said at the weekend, I love this one because people will respond very aggressively, which is part, that's part of Scottish football. The debate's always good fun. But it's just voted for by the players, so there's no like, yeah, there's no scandal here.
For years, I always told Gordon Dale that the writers knew more about it than the footballers, that used to noise them up dreadfully. But I think the players have got it right this year. I can't really pick fault anywhere. I know the point Andy made at the weekend about Bashiri playing so many games and Suter only playing half a season. You could make, you know, if you're saying Triantis over Raskin, yeah, it's an opinion thing. Daz was quite strong. Simon Murray over Sam Dalby.
Yeah.
At the weekend, that's an opinion thing as well. But actually, you couldn't pick fault. There are no, to use the phrase in Scottish football, no clear and obvious errors.
Would you understand why Hibs fans might, well, to be fair, Andy voted for Triantis. He thought Triantis should be in. Hibs are a pretty good bet for third, and there are no players in the team of the year. Does that surprise you in any way?
I think what it shows is it's been a really good team effort by Hibs. You know, up top, they've got Boyle and whoever it is. Midfield, Triantis done well. The two Caddens have done well in the flanks. Bashiri's done well in the middle. But I'll be fascinated to see who wins Hibernian's Club Player of the Year, because it really has been a team effort. We're just looking here at the TV. Leeds are promoted. Burnley are promoted. No more arguments about dual ownership with the 49ers.
Well, there you go. Who would have thought that the game at Turf Moor had implications for Clyde One Super Scoreboard tonight, but there you go. So you're happy enough with that team of the year? You wouldn't grumble, Roger Hannah?
No, I think the players have got it right.
There you go. If you want to,
they don't usually get it right, the players.
I just like noising up the dancer, Andy. Come on.
If you want to disagree with any of that, you can do 01419511025. You went for Dalby though over Simon Murray, yeah?
I did, yeah. I think I said on Saturday, sometimes it's all just but about the timing with the PFA come to the training ground and ask you to put in your votes, because I think straight after we put in our votes, I think Simon Murray scored a double that weekend against St Mirren, and I think he followed that up by a game the next weekend that took him to second top goal scorer at that time in voting. I think that way he was a top goal scorer. So again, I don't think there's too much. If somebody argued Simon Murray, to me, I can't really argue against it. I think he'd be very unlucky to miss out along with a couple of others. I think Vaclav Cherny as well, I think, is really unlucky to miss out. I think Nicholas Coon's unbelievable form for the first 6 months kind of solidified his position in the team, although he's had that kind of drop off over the last 5-6 weeks.
Let's bring in William and Darnley. How are you, William?
I'm fine, Gordon. How are you, panel?
Good, thank you. All good. What made you call tonight?
Roger Hannah.
What's he done?
Said Celtic looking over their shoulder at what Rangers do. I totally disagree. Celtic are the one club that I say to both set of supporters, worry about your own club. So I totally disagree with Roger.
Come on, Roger.
Well, listen, we're all entitled to our opinion.
No, don't back down. Come on.
I'm certainly not backing down. The point I'm making, Gordon, is if you're in a league, and this league's unique, Celtic are the champions. I think they've won 12 out of the last 13, about to win 13 out of the last 14. Their only legitimate challengers for next season's title will be Rangers. Now, if Rangers come out and spend X million, Celtic will have a look and think, we're going to have to spend a bit of money here. And Celtic will spend a bit of money anyway. They spent £26 million in three players at the end of the last summer window. I think, and I said earlier on in the show, William, I think they'll sign at least five, possibly six players in the summer. There'll be another left-back, a centre-back, a couple of midfielders, a winger, maybe a striker. You could see two left-backs if we're still including Kieran Tierney and all of this. But I think a lot of that will be driven to make sure they keep the gap as it is between themselves and Rangers. And that, there's nothing the matter with that.
You disagree with that, William? You think it would just be a sole focus on trying to be Celtic's best version of themselves?
Well, who says Rangers are going to be the second best team and challenge Celtic?
I did.
We don't know.
History tends to tell you that, doesn't it?
We do know, because for the first 3 months of this season, we were kidding ourselves on that it might have been Aberdeen. And there's as big a gap between Rangers and the rest as there is between Celtic and Rangers. So Rangers will be the only team that will offer any challenge in terms of the Premiership title to Celtic next season.
Well, maybe so, but who says Celtic win the league next year?
I thought you did.
I did not say that. What a reminder to
you. Do you think they will?
Well, as I tell you, but I think they will. But who sees the terms of relativity to win the league? Anything can happen.
Oh, no, I was saying that earlier. I think Celtic will be overwhelming favourites to win the league next season, though, William. And I think Rangers will be overwhelming favourites to be second in the league. So would you, I've said earlier on the show, it's going to be a really, really fascinating summer, because I think Celtic will sign five or six on top of Kieran Tierney. And we just don't know what Rangers are. We genuinely, and I'll put my hands up here, we just don't know what Rangers, we don't know what Rangers will do.
As usual, Andy, we always kind of struggle to strike a balance at times. I don't think Roger is suggesting this, and I don't think anyone should, that they think Celtic are going to be terrified and trembling and worried about looking over their shoulder. No. But at the same time, in any sort of competitive sporting environment, would it be daft to not take a wee look at what your rivals are doing? And, you know, kind of in a harmless sense.
I think you've always got one eye on your rivals to see what they're doing on a weekly basis, never mind a summer basis. It's, you know, Celtic are, what is it now, 15 points ahead at the top of the table. If Rangers lose to St Mirren at the weekend, Celtic fans will know about it. They'll have one eye on it so they can have their wee dig and a wee laugh about it. That's just the way it goes in Glasgow. I don't think it's going to be any different this weekend. One thing's for sure, I think both clubs will be busy. I think as much as we've spoke about Rangers and their recruitment, if this takeover comes to fruition, I don't think it's going to be any different to Celtic. I think Celtic are going to try and strengthen in key areas of the pitch. So I think from that point of view, I think it's a summit to look forward to for both clubs.
Thank you to William on 01419511025.
I'm now fascinated, because we've got Scott Parker, the Burnley manager, on the television. Now, one look at me, if anybody's watching this on YouTube tonight, one look at me and you know that I am not a dedicated follower of fashion. But you two younger gentlemen who are, were telling me earlier on that Scott Parker's jacket would be worth about, what did you say?
Oh, a lot of money.
An awful lot of money. He's lost it. Where is it?
Would you not notice they went up to hug his family, and his son presumably
had the same jacket,
had the same type of garment on. So Scott Parker's career's been good to him, is what we can take away from this.
Well, it looks as if he's lost his jacket.
He's given it away to a lucky fan who's got it on eBay already.
I mean, they're celebrating, but they'll both be done next year.
Well, that's the way it's gone, isn't it? Yeah. Is that two seasons in a row?
Has Hugh Keevan's moved in here? What a miserable thing that is. It is true, but give them their moment.
With Leicester at the weekend, you're right. Yeah. It's heading that way.
Leicester
up against
Southampton, yeah.
And what was it? Luton, Burnley and
Sheffield United
last season?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we don't worry about that stuff, do we? Let's bring in Charlie. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hi,
how are you?
Not bad for a good night. I kind of had a couple, but at the point on the game yesterday, and the kind of point about the conversations we're having at the start of the show, like,
go for it.
The point on the game was about James Forrest not getting the penalty kick. To me, it was as clear a penalty as you see, and denied the boy a chance for scoring 17 seasons in a row. Johnson Clare came in, gave the mask right across his face. I think the commentators were talking on the game. Maybe not look at a penalty kick, but I think maybe they're looking at the feet and not looking at the guy's horn. Like, come right across, shoved his jaw and he to the side, and that's what put James Forrest in. It's as clear a penalty as you'll see. How did it not happen?
What did you think, Andy? Because we've now got two layers, obviously, where the basic question of, like, is it a penalty is still the main one, but then was it enough of not a penalty for it to get overturned?
In terms of both decisions, so we'll talk about Mackenzie Kurt's wonder strike and James Forrest's goal, penalty, I thought they were both the correct decision on field, because the referee made that decision on field. I think when you look at the replay for both, I didn't think there was enough in either to overturn the referee's original decision.
What about in that moment, if it was you?
I think it's...
if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be offended either or, but I think when you've got the ball and you're running at such pace as James Forrest is, I think that's enough to impede him for a penalty. So I could have no complaints with a penalty. And the fact that the referee gave a penalty in the first instance, I think it's enough for the decision to stand. Now, to give my opinion to Charlie, which frustrates me so much about the clear and obvious error, we don't know what the referee's comms were to VAR. Right? No, did he feel as if he's seen a trip? I can't even remember St Johnson defender that slides in initially, and the referee then says to VAR there's been a trip inside the box, then that's why it would be a clear and obvious error and you'd be sent to the screen. But I think there's enough to be a penalty. But I also don't think there's enough of infringement on Adam Eder to roll out Mackenzie Kurt's goal, and I feel sorry for him as well, because he scored a 25 yard wonder strike at Hampden, and obviously that ends up being ruled out as well.
What did you think, Roger?
I was hard sorry for Mackenzie Kurt, because they're 4-0 down. He's come on, He's seen Sinisalo deny him. I know he was offside for that when it counted anyway. He denied him that one. And then he spanked one into the top corner. It would have been nice if they just said, that's so good a goal, we're going to let it stand.
It's not the way it works, is it?
It's not the way it works. And it was a foul by Balogun on Ida, whether we like it or not. The penalty.
You think so, yeah.
Do you think it's enough of a foul to overrule it?
It's two hands in the back, isn't it?
I think it is.
Again, I think this is where Andy's right. And I know this is a bit, maybe a bit kind of pernickety for some people, but it is important. It really does depend what the ref and the VAR say to each. Just as an example, and I'm totally making this up, I've not heard it. If the ref says on the Adam Ida one, yeah, he's come in at the back, but there are no hands on his back, and then at that point VAR can say, oh, hold on, you've actually got that wrong. There are hands on the back, and then, you know, then you'd be called to the monitor.
And I think that's even more prevalent than the Forest one, because you could see why he gave the penalty. You don't know what the communications are. Is it a clear and obvious error by the referee? Possibly not.
Yeah, because as Charlie said, I don't know if anyone really saw it in the first instance, but there is a kind of hand in the face, isn't there?
Yeah, very much so. So is that what it's given for? Or was it given for something else? And the VAR said, no, that didn't happen, Callum. I actually thought Callum Scott had a decent game for his first semi-final yesterday. But that was a one. Listen, it's not a decisive. It's not 0-0 when James Forrest was denied the penalty. I know the sentimental thing that Charlie's talking about. I think James Forrest will get his goal by hook or by crook by the end of the season, the way Celtic are playing and the way he's playing. But
Charlie,
I actually couldn't quite make my mind up about the penalty.
Charlie, forget all that. There was a guy sitting right behind the press box where I was who had who had a 6-0 bet on.
And exactly.
there was no time added on at the end of the
and
game.
Injury time. I know. No injury time and all. We raised that at the end of the game. It doesn't matter. It's not a case of the officials feeling sorry for a team on the park. They have a duty and a responsibility to make sure all the rules are carried out. Everything's applied as it's supposed to be. There was plenty of VAR. There was plenty of injury time in the second half. And people, as like you say, the guy behind, I thought about that. There'll be people up and down the country robbed because of somebody has a wee bit of a conscience or a feel sorry for St Johnstone.
My full sympathy to anyone who thought they were getting a nice uplift on whatever betting platform. Please gamble responsibly. I found it a bit weird just at the time, but I think it does matter a bit less when there are no other implications for that result. As an example, in a league game, you just can't do that. You can't, because goal difference could matter. There could be other teams waiting. Yeah. But you were at Hampden yesterday. Brendan Rodgers and Simo Vallecari were hugging each other at 89 minutes and 30 seconds. So absolutely. Brendan Rodgers wasn't bothered.
And it just adds fuel to the theory that Hugh Keevans runs Scottish football.
Good point.
Because for the first time this season, he had a prediction correct. St Johnstone 0, Celtic 5. He feared Celtic were going to score a sixth goal. He'd get away with it when Jota missed, when Maeda missed, when the penalty was overturned. And I think he has sent Hugh Keevan's waves to Callum Scott and said, get this game over, I've won.
I can't remember the last time I've seen that happen. Mm-hmm. The whistle been blown bang on 90 minutes.
And those two VAR checks were long.
They were long, yeah. But again, I was really shocked when it happened at the time. And I remember thinking, was there any number shown by the fourth official? No. But I can't remember the last time I seen that happened. It was really surprising at the time.
See, I mean, no, and again, look, I know people will say it's not the point. It's not, and I get all that. So I'm not trying to diminish that. But I genuinely wonder if that is part of it, where it, in a sporting sense, maybe not a gambling sense to people, but in a sporting sense, it makes no difference.
No, but I tell you what, if it was in the league, when we're looking at this bottom six and we're wanting each other's team,
you couldn't possibly
run up the goal difference. You can't do that, absolutely. So I think, I get your point. But again, just for a spectator point of view, I was really surprised when it happened. Just like I said, I can't remember the last time I seen it.
Thank you, Charlie. 01419511025. We're looking for the last 11 players who've been named in the Premiership Team of the Year without playing for Celtic or Rangers at that time. So James Penrice, Sam Dalby, Lawrence Shankland, Kevin Van Veen.
I'm going to go Craig Gordon.
Yes, he was in the 21-22 team for Hearts.
Played for Celtic?
No, sorry, at the time when they were named in the team.
Oh, right, okay. Changes all my guesses.
Yeah, don't worry, you'll still have a few.
Was Danny Armstrong in it last year?
No.
Christopher from Ayrshire?
No.
No?
I'm not going back that far.
John Suter?
Yes, at Hearts. We'll get the rest of the answers when we return.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are into the final part of tonight's show. There is still time to squeeze in a call if you fancy, whether it is going over the weekend's action, looking forward, something entirely different. It is up to you. Thank you to Jammy Dodger for sending tonight's full-time teaser in. The email you need if you want to send one in is fulltime@clyde1.com. Can you name the last 11 players who've been named in the PFA Scotland Premiership Team of the Year whilst not playing for Celtic or Rangers? James Penrice, Sam Dalby, Lawrence Shankland, Kevin Van Veen, Craig Gordon, John Suter.
Graham Shinney?
Nope.
Kevin Nisbet?
Nope.
Martin Boyle?
Oh, you're struggling now.
Oh, we are. I'm going to go back to the year you said no to Christopher Firmino. Any of that Kilmarnock team for Steve Clarke? Is it all closer than that?
Charles Cook?
Yes, Regan Charles Cook.
Well done.
21-22 season, Ross County.
Mitov didn't make it, did he? This season at St Johnstone?
No.
Okay.
What about Stephen O'Donnell?
Again, might be going a wee bit far back here, but Sam Cosgrove,
no.
Adam Rooney.
No. Okay, four to get. We'll try and get them before the end of the show. Like I say, still time to call, time to tweet. If you want to get in touch, you can do. I think you alluded to it, Roger Hanna. If anyone wasn't listening at the start, you're not too happy about this, but let's elaborate a bit more, because there's been a bit of fallout from the Cup semi-finals. And that is that Hearts have issued a statement assuring their fans they're engaging with the authorities. Particularly over the Cammy Devlin red card. Now, it was two bookings, so one was 2 minutes before the winning goal. It was deep in extra time. That, of course, put Hearts down to nine men after Michael Steinwinder was shown a red card, a straight one, in the 43rd minute. So they say, we give credit to Aberdeen, we take issue with the refereeing. Neither yellow issued to Cammy Devlin was warranted. We should not have been put in the position. It directly affected the outcome. It comes in the back of other decisions that have not gone in our favour. It's a cursory glance at the KMI review panel shows we've benefited once from errors, the joint second lowest, and we've suffered four against, the joint second highest. Public silence on our part should not be mistaken for inaction.
Well, listen, I don't want to do down the KMI, not for 1 minute, because it gives us headlines in the newspaper and on the radio station every week. But the KMI is a panel. It might as well be a panel of you, me and Andy Gordon. That's what it is. It doesn't really hold any great weight. You're friendly with Willie Collum. You do your show with Willie Collum. I'd be far more interested to hear Willie Collum's take on a lot of this. Here's my prediction.
Just on that, you won't hear Willie Collins taking it, because a second yellow doesn't even go to VAR.
Publicly or privately, when you next speak to Willie Collum, I will bet you Willie Collum backs John Beaton on the two red cards, or on the three red cards, if you like.
I suppose the thing about it, Andy, for me, is always that you get scale of mistakes. I said to you at the weekend, we were on air, and I thought Cammy Devlin could have stayed on the pitch, to be honest. I didn't think... But did I think it was a statement-worthy decision? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure about that.
Well, forgive me, Gordon, because I was actually trying to go through my phone, because I was sitting in here with you watching the game, and Cammy Devlin made a lot of fouls in the game. So the fact of the matter is the second booking a foul? Yes. So it's up to John Beaton whether he thinks it's a booking worthy. Now, you could say it's harsh, but like I says... We watched the game. Cammy Devlin made a lot of fouls within the game, so I wasn't sure if it was an accumulation of fouls. I was just trying to double check that there, but it certainly wasn't statement worthy of a mistake. Now, the first red card for me, I don't think there's any dubiety towards it at all. I think there's no doubt about it that Keskinen's running through on goal. I think when Steinwinder makes a foul, I think he's last man. You know, I actually said when we were watching it live, I debated whether Adam Forrester, in live scenario, was he getting back? Was he recovering in time? When I see it back, I don't think he is. Especially with Keskinen's touch being perfect and taking it towards direct goal, and I think he's in. So I don't think there's too much of a claim from Hearts over the two decisions.
Because I've now seen Aberdeen fans, Roger, and this is inevitable, tweeting various clips. Was there one where... who got booked for Aberdeen? Is it Noster?
Yeah, Matt Knuster.
Knuster, sorry. And I think Cammy Devlin pulled him away, and Knuster got booked and Devlin didn't. And Aberdeen fans are going, oh, you didn't mention this in your statement. And this is where I just, I don't know, I get why clubs want to stick up for themselves, but it's almost like you all know when there's been like an, you know one of those real howlers.
Gordon, this isn't even top 10
that's what I mean.
It's
like,
not even top 10 this season in terms of bad decisions. I think John Beaton called them correctly. The VAR clearly thinks John Beaton called the first one correctly. Andy here is counting Cammy Devlin fouls. So if he didn't go for that one, he might have gone even earlier. And then the assistant manager doesn't behave and he gets a red card as well. It's not going well for Hearts at the minute. The chief executive, Andrew McKinley, issued a grovelling apology to fans last week for a failure to reach the top six. And now this statement trying to pick flaws in officiating. As I said earlier on the show, I think Hearts fans can probably see through it.
Do you know what's annoying me more? Because this isn't just Hearts, this is generally about the way the KMI panel is being cited when it suits people.
Yeah.
Because it's very selective. Let's remind ourselves of the origins here of why this exists. Because see, previously when we had VAR and we had no KMI panel, people said that the Scottish FA would release figures and say we're getting 95% of these decisions correct. And people, rightly or understandably, would scoff and say they're marking their own homework. Yeah, yeah. What use is that? Why not get football people involved? Let's see what they think, blah, blah, blah. And now that that's there, people only mention it when, oh, look at what's Hearts, we're second most hard done by here. And I've seen, you know, like I say, this is not really about Hearts because other clubs have done it as well. When it suits, it gets referenced, and when it doesn't, it just gets, and to be fair, we all do it, right? Yeah. They're published every Friday. We only mention it here on a Friday night if there's a couple of mistakes in the KMI panel.
The double red.
Numerous weeks go past where the KMI panel comes out and says that everything's been correct and we don't mention it on a Friday night.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's very selective. So yeah. Do you think that's more hassle than it's worth now?
No, I think it's a good
thing.
You're
thinking about your newspaper.
No, I am, of course.
Because it just gives people an opportunity to count. Now got this semi-official league table of mistakes when actually the KMI panel is still people's opinions on subjective incidents. Some of them might be 3-2 splits on the vote,
100%.
And yet people are holding this up as proof.
I think it's a good thing, and your pal Willie Collum has been a breath of fresh air in the way he's taken on that job as the head of referees at Hampden. He has shown new heights of openness, transparency, a willingness to engage with clubs, a willingness to engage with the media, a willingness to engage with supporters. The SFA Referees Department, for me, are heading in the right direction. Yes, there are still mistakes. You saw one with Václav Černý in the League Cup final. You saw one with Alistair Johnson at Easter Road when they said the ball was over the line when it wasn't, or they couldn't prove it was. We have seen high-profile ones this season. I don't think those ones at Hampden and Saturday were wrong at all.
I wonder what the UEFA KMI panel thought about Cyril Dessers at Athletic Club and what that... If that was a penalty, I'm not saying that Marvin Bartley could have been on the UEFA KMI panel, so we'd never know.
He's still researching the durability of various shirt manufacturers. But anyway, right, I think we're almost there. We are almost out of time. Let's round off this teaser. It's a good one. It's topical. I know lots of you will have memories of these players who've had standout seasons. So can you name the last 11 players to make the PFA Scotland team of the season without playing for Celtic or Rangers at that time? James Penrice, Sam Dalby, Lauren Shankland, Kevin Van Veen, Craig Gordon, John Souter, Regan Charles Cook. Four to get.
Miowski?
Yes.
Ian Boyce?
Nope. Miowski last season. Two more from last season that you've not got.
David Watson?
I was thinking about last year.
Luke McCowan?
What if I told you that we lowly Motherwell, as they've been in the last few seasons, had a striker in the team of the season two seasons in a row? So you've already got Van Veen. Who is after him?
Oh,
Theo
Bear.
Theo Bear.
Did you get too many? I don't even remember that.
Okay. We barely got to know this guy. We really liked him at the time. Folk had him linked with Celtic and so on, and now he's away back down the road. And
Owen Beck. He was
Dundee,
very good, to be fair.
And the last one, the 22-23 season, Aberdeen. He is still there, but he probably was at his peak at this point.
Shinny?
He clearly felt he was at his peak at this point.
Nicky Devlin?
Duke.
Duke. Brilliant.
All right, thank you, Andy. Thank you, Roger. And as always, same every night, the biggest thanks goes to you for your calls, your tweets, and to the many of you who just sit back and listen and probably shout at your radio or your YouTube stream telling us how much nonsense we're talking. We still appreciate it. We're back tomorrow, 6 o'clock, and we'll see you then.